Culture Affidavit, episode 153. Just part of the song. Hello and welcome to episode 153 of Pop Culture Affidavit, the podcast that takes a look at everything random in the world of popular culture, which is brought to you by the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network. I'm your host, Tom Panarese. So this episode is going to be an interesting one, especially for you music fans out there. This episode is going to be about song parts. And what I mean by that is exactly what it sounds like. I'm going to spend the next hour or so talking about the few seconds of a track that makes a song immortal, or is something that you remember the most when you think of it. It's kind of a curious concept, but one that's been on my mind for a very long time and has sat in my idea file for at least a few years. I got the idea for this episode from a 20-year-old blog post. This was back in the day when blogs were pretty much the biggest thing, and there were tons of different platforms, and sites like WordPress hadn't completely standardized the format. I used to have a whole folder of bookmarks at work that I would run through from day to day or week to week, and it was honestly way more fun than, say, checking my social media feeds every 30 seconds. Anyway, a writer named Robert Berry has a site called Retro Crush. In May to June 2004, did a countdown of what he considered to be the best 50 song parts. From what I recall, he decided to reveal a new entry every day for 50 days, and I think he used a grid of just like a timeline format, something similar to what Comic Book Resources has done over the years with their advent calendar every Christmas season. And of course, it was a countdown, so every day I would come back to the site to see the new part or what his commentary was. From what I remember, I was bored off my ass office worker at the time, was that it was a load of fun, and if I'm being honest, way more engaging than the many countdown videos that I've seen over the years on YouTube. No offense to those of you who do YouTube content, I just really loved the slow build of his method using the blog format and how it gave me something to look forward to for a while. Now that I'm done rambling and kind of yelling at a cloud, I'll say that I have been thinking about this blog post literally for the past 20 years. When I hear some of the songs that Berry picked, I'm reminded of it, and when I hear something new, I wonder how he would have put it up against his 50. Retro Crush is sort of around, not in its original form, and the song part countdown I could not find live. I found a version of it on the Internet Archive, so I will link to that in my show notes, because I used the original list as a guide when I was preparing the show, and I'm actually going to talk about what he singled out, starting with his top 10 and then going through some other song parts on his top 50 that I also love. And then I'm going to get into the ones that I have of my own that are in addition to what he had on his list. So there's plenty to hear in this episode, and I'll start with Robert Berry's top 10 right after this.
For years, the Fire and Water Podcast Network has found its joy talking about comics. From Aquaman and Firestorm to Batman and Plastic Man, From giant treasuries to pocket-sized digests. From massive miniseries events to singular one-shot adventures. From romance to horror to whatever the hell Ohatmu or not is. In the last year, they've begun to carve a path through their favorite television shows, such as MASH, Cheers, and Justice League Unlimited, and there's no sign of them stopping. What medium will Fire and Water conquer next? Do you like good music? Introducing Fire and Water Records, the music anthology podcast from the Fire and Water Network. Find your joy in all new ways as members of the Fire and Water Network and their friends discuss favorite songs, albums, concerts, and artists.
Hang on, I've been doing a music show for 2 years.
Featuring Record Revolution.
Join the Brothers Daily as we catalog the essential years that shaped popular music and our own lives.
A Very Daily Christmas.
An annual celebration of our favorite holiday tracks.
Plus, all new episodes of Zoom for Sam.
The show in which I share my joy of Samantha Fox by spotlighting a single every single episode.
And Pod Dylan.
No, not Pod Dylan. We discussed this. That's staying on its own feed.
Not Pod Dylan, but everything else I said. Plus, so much more. There's even a chance David Ace Gutierrez will show up.
Which brings us back to Fastball, which is really one of the most interesting American bands in the world today. When you think about the number of side projects and solo projects associated with the band, it actually almost outdoes.
Fire and Water Records, a proud part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Gee, it must be great, be great, be great, be great. Yo!
By the way, before I get started here, I wanted to point out that the music you're hearing is called Intro Inspection. It's a mashup compiled by a DJ named Osymyso, O-S-Y-M-Y-S-O. It was created back in 2001. A friend of mine from way back in my days living in Arlington burned the track. It's about 12 minutes long to a CD. It's also on YouTube. I'll try to link to that in the show notes as well. In fact, YouTube has done us one better because someone not only posted all of the Intro Inspection track, they mashed up the corresponding videos to go along with it. It's wild and it's a treat to watch. I highly recommend it. So like I said, in 2004, Robert Berry of Retro Crush compiled the top 50 best song parts. And when I was making my own list, I knew that his and mine would overlap. So I've decided to run down his top 10 and offer my own commentary, and then run down a list of some others that were in his top 50 that I particularly love. Number 10 on his list, well, it's a classic that many of us who were kids in the 1983 memorized. It's Vincent Price's monologue in Thriller.
Across the land, the midnight hour is close at hand. Creatures crawl in search of blood to terrorize your neighborhood.
With all that's come out about Michael Jackson in the last 20 to 30 years, it sometimes gets hard to remember just how enormous he was in the 80s and how loved he was in the 80s. Thriller came out when I was 6. I was in the first grade. But I still had a copy on cassette. I played it over and over, especially the title track and Beat It and Billie Jean. And the video was just monumental. We still had Showtime at that moment, and we also had a VCR. So we actually taped not just the Thriller video, but the making of featurette that came with it. I was scared of some movie monsters at the time, but this never scared me. My friends and I all thought it was cool. And honestly, it really is. While I certainly have the King of Pop's actions and reputation on my mind whenever I listen to his music, and most of the time when I listen to his music, it's from either the Jackson 5 or the off-the-wall Thriller era, I have to say that this video and the album hold up in a way that much of the pop from that time, or even Jackson's stuff afterward from Bad onward, doesn't. Now, number 9, well, that's the drum intro to Hot for Teacher. I'd say that as far as drum intros go, this is in probably the top 5, alongside such indelible songs as We Will Rock You and Be My Baby. It displays Alex Van Halen's ability to, as someone, I think it was Chuck Klosterman, it might have been Sarah Bunting, I can't remember where I read it on the internet years ago, said he was a Muppet behind the drum kit. And that's an apt comparison, even though we all know that Animal's a better drummer. Because when I hear this, I just can't imagine having the ability to do what he does. And I will tell you that I especially like the moment where it starts to transition from a drum solo into a discernible rhythm to allow Eddie's guitar to make itself known. Hot for Teacher is a sleazy song, but it is great sleaze. And this elevates it over the more crass stuff of the era from groups like Warrant or Winger. Number 8 on Robert Barry's countdown is this moment from the B-52's Rock Lobster. I'm not being dismissive here when I say that I like the song Rock Lobster, but my favorite B-52 songs are from the late 80s. Rome is my personal favorite one. So I've never really gone out of my way to listen to their early stuff. Rock Lobster is a good track. This is a good part of it. But I'm going to move on to number 7, which is this line from Sympathy for the Devil. I shouted out, who killed the Kennedys? I was on an episode of Fire and Water Records in the last few months where we talked about the Stones, and this song was actually one of my picks. If you want a more in-depth look at it from me and Ryan Daly and Neil Daly and Omar, go over there. It was a great conversation. What I love about this part of the song is that it's one of the most sinister parts, and you could hear that in Mick Jagger's voice. I would also imagine that this lyric hit really hard when the song was first released in the late 60s because of its proximity to those assassinations. Coming in at number 6 is the opening to Immigrant Song by Led Zeppelin. This is on here, and I probably don't need to explain it, although I will say that the first time I ever heard this part of a song was actually in a television commercial, and not like years after they'd started licensing stuff to television. No, back in the early 90s, I think it was like about 91, 92, the Led Zeppelin remastered boxed set came out. It had, I believe the cover they advertised was like crop circles or something somewhere in England. There were a lot of commercials for it on TV and you could call and order it, et cetera. And it was one of those classic record commercials where, like, you know, somebody was talking about it and there were a bunch of voiceovers and song titles, et cetera, and bits and pieces of the song were playing as they did. And this one always stood out to me because I was like, what is that sound? And I didn't know for years that the song was Immigrant Song. When a friend of mine, or I think one of my college roommates, had Led Zeppelin 3, but I had seen that commercial 200 times. I mean, it was always on, like on in the afternoon on like PIX or Fox or WRR. It was just always, always played. So I will always associate it with that commercial, even though it has been used in Thor movies as of recent. And it is a classic track from Led Zeppelin III. Johnny Cash comes in at number 5 with this line from A Boy Named Sue.
Well, I said, my name is Sue. How do you do? How you gonna die? Yeah, that's what I told him.
Like the B-52s, my experience with Johnny Cash is pretty limited. A Boy Named Sue is one of his iconic songs. I completely agree with this, but I don't have enough experience with his music to have really strong opinions. So I'm going to move on to a song that I do have strong opinions on and a band that I have followed for years and years and years, or loved for years and years. The band is Queen. The song is Bohemian Rhapsody, and it's this part.
Beelzebub has a devil put aside for me, for me.
Like Immigrant Song, this needs no explanation. Bohemian Rhapsody is easily one of the best songs ever written, and one of those that, despite its length, has to be listened to from beginning to end, and you have to listen to it all the way to the end, no matter where you come in when you find it on the radio. And like so many of my generation, I cannot listen to this part of the song without headbanging, thanks to Wayne's World. Coming in at number 3 is another guitar part. This is the opening riff to Barracuda. Damn, I love Heart. I love 80s Heart. I love 70s Heart. The Wilson sisters are phenomenal, and sometimes I don't think they get the credit they deserve as two women fronting a rock band. This is one of the defining guitar riffs of the 70s, and the song itself is just so damn good, not only because of Nancy Wilson's guitar, but because of the power in Ann Wilson's vocals. Outstanding. We've got two more on the original 2004 Retro Crush countdown that I pulled up. The first one out of the two is from The Who. It is from Won't Get Fooled Again, and it is pretty predictable. Yeah, this is great. Although, I can't think of this part of the song without thinking of Joel McHale and The Soup, because he would do a running bit of David Caruso's like weird one-liners of or puns and things like that, and like show them and then show like cut to the scream from Won't Get Fooled Again. I never watched an episode of CSI Miami, so I have no idea if that's how things actually ran. But I mean, Who's Next is such a great album. This on its own is such a great song. There are better bands in my mind than The Who, and there are lead singers from 70s bands that I like more than Roger Daltrey, but this particular song and this particular album are just absolutely just great. So, you know, I can't deny how good it is. And now, the number one song part on that original countdown from way back in 2004 is... Oh, come on, you knew this. And you all did air drums. So about the rest of this, well, I will link to it in the show notes in some form. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to very, very quickly run down a list of several other song parts that were included that overlapped the list that I would have had. At number 17 is When One by Metallica Becomes Heavier and Faster. Number 19, the synth and piano intro to Baba O'Reilly by The Who. Number 21, about roughly halfway into Under Pressure by Queen and David Bowie, which is right around the bridge section, although I am more fond of the last verse right up until the end as opposed to that. So my favorite part does come in a little later, but I had to mention it. Number 22, the chorus to Just a Friend by Biz Markie. Number 28, the Now Wait a Minute part from Shout by the Isley Brothers, or as many in my generation also remember, the cover version by the fictional band Otis Day and the Knights from Animal House. Number 30... Number 34 is the end of Los Lobos' version of La Bamba. Number 36, the bass guitar solo from You Can Call Me Al by Paul Simon. Number 43, the guitar solo at the end of Let's Go Crazy. Number 44 was the opening of Born to Run. Number 45, the Go Soft and Then Go Loud part of Blister in the Sun by the Violent Femmes. And somewhere at the very, very bottom of the countdown was...
Yeah! Kick it!
So that's the original list. That list was the inspiration for this episode. I shared what I overlapped with and as well as what his top 10 was. So what do I want to add to it? What are parts that I remember find memorable? Well... stay tuned and find out.
You ask your mom, please, but she still says no. You missed two classes and no homework. But your teacher brings this class like you're some kind of jerk. You gotta fight for your right.
Hey everybody, Michael Bailey here with a trailer announcing the return of It All Comes Back to Superman. Well, sort of the return of It All Comes Back to Superman. Desperate to stay relevant and chase those sweet, sweet podcasting dollars, I've decided that since all of the shows on the Fortress of Baileytude podcasting network are moving to a new hosting platform, that I would start It All Comes Back to Superman over with a new number one and name. So really, this is a trailer for the sort of new, pretty much the same as before,
It All Comes Back to Superman Series 2.
It All Comes Back to Superman Series 2 will be... it's gonna be... oh, God. Are you hearing this music that's playing right now? In all honesty, I chose it because I thought it had a good trailer feel. But the more I'm sitting here listening to it, the more it sounds like something... you know what it sounds like? It sounds like something you would hear in the background of a motivational video your job made you watch that is full of corporate jargon and buzzwords and useless affirmations trying to convince you that working there is some freaking higher calling. Or, you know what else it sounds like? It sounds like it would be behind an ad on YouTube that is trying to sell you something that is supposedly life-altering, but in reality is at best useless, and at worst dangerous, and probably should be illegal. Yeah, you know what? I'm done. I'm done with this music. Yeah, it's over. I'm just gonna go with the music I've licensed for the show. I should have just done that from the beginning. There. That's better. Anyway, It All Comes Back to Superman Series 2 will be pretty much like the first series, just with a convenient new numbering system. Episodes will be erratic at first, because it's me, but hopefully by the end of 2024 they should be released on a regular basis. Some episodes will be one-and-dones. Some will be part of rolling series, with names like The Earth 2 Superman Files, and Clothes Maketh the Villain, the superpowered makeovers of Lex Luthor and Brainiac. There might even be holiday specials every once in a while, as well as episodes from the previous feed making their way over to the new one just to kind of freshen them up a bit. No matter the subject, movies, comics, action figures, prose, the show will be all about my love and fandom for the greatest fictional character ever created.
It all comes back to Superman Series 2.
Part of the Fortress of Baileytude Podcasting Network. Available through Libsyn on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and other podcatching platforms. Show notes and other bits and bobs will still be available on posts over at www.fortressofbaileytude.com.
Oh yeah, that's one of them. Who can resist the opening of You Make My Dreams by Hall & Oates? I've got several more like this, and the way I'm going through my list is, well, kind of like via the parts placed in a song, so I'm not like counting things down per se, but I figure the first ones are going to come from the openings and intros of songs, and I'm going to work my way to the last ones that I list are going from the endings of songs. And this way, I don't have to sit there and have to parse out what gets what and what ranks where. So kind of it's a cop out, I know, but, you know, whatever, it's my show. So my criteria for this was not much beyond me liking it. That, of course, means it skews to my taste and it isn't as diverse as it could be. Although I did try to use songs that people will know instead of picking some weird obscure album cut from a band nobody's heard of or heard from since like 1985. And of course, even with all of this sort of like, I'm going to make this easy on myself, this was still pretty hard to put together, if I'm being honest. There were so many I wanted to include, but if I put my entire list here, I would have wound up with like an entire Hot 100's worth of songs. And as I go through this, you'll probably think of a ton of songs that I could have included. Anyway, let's get started. There is so much to associate with Hungry Like the Wolf, much of it from the video. But from that opening moment of a woman's laugh, you know that this is the consummate Duran Duran song and one of the consummate 80s pop songs. The laugh is really what makes it because it adds a kind of sexiness to the game of pursuit that Simon Le Bon is singing about. And that's just a single laugh. A memorable single laugh, just like a memorable single note. Okay, I'll play more.
When I was a young boy, my father took me into the city to see a marching band.
He said, there's a meme on social media that says summon a generation in one note, and I want to say that this is its origin point. Honestly, Welcome to the Black Parade is one of those perfect songs. It is of the pop punk emo genre, and it feels like it's an epic that is timeless. To have it begin so simply with the piano puts it up there with Stairway or Bohemian Rhapsody when you situate it in its era. It is elevated beyond a lot of the stuff that was there and was among the masses. Now, Bohemian Rhapsody, Stairway to Heaven, a couple of other songs that are like that, save their let's go fast and harder part for like the climax of the song. And My Chemical Romance actually goes harder and closer like right after this intro, which I think works even better, at least for this particular genre. You wouldn't want to wait too long for it to go really, really hard. So that's one of the reasons I really, really like it. By the way, I've never seen this band live. I probably should go and look at a live version of this song because I can imagine that that intro would make the crowd go absolutely crazy because they know they're going to get like the epic song of this band. Speaking of epic, here's Meatloaf.
On a hot summer night, would you offer your throat to the wolf with the red roses?
Will he offer me his mouth?
Yes.
Will he offer me his teeth?
Yes.
Will he offer me his jaws?
Yes.
Will he offer me his hunger?
Yes.
Again, will he offer me his hunger?
Yes.
And will he starve without me?
Yes.
Then does he love me?
Yes.
Yes.
On a hot summer night, would you offer your throat to the wolf with the red roses?
Yes.
I bet you say that to all the boys.
It is really hard to begin a song with a spoken word piece. But Jim Steinman never did back down from a challenge. Took the words right out of my mouth, parentheses, hot summer night, feels like it belongs in a musical. I probably was in that musical that Steinman wrote at one point, because it is a true performance piece. And making the performance better are those first notes after the intro, because it has like a Phil Spector type of feel. And while I like other songs on Bat Out of Hell, this is easily one of the best ones on the record, and it's because of this intro in a big way, as well as the outro. The claps, the outro are really, really good. But no, this is right up there with like Paradise by the Dashboard Light, Bat Out of Hell, and All Revved Up and No Place to Go, which really are these are like my four favorites on the CD, which doesn't have any skips, really, if I'm being honest. And I'd say you really can't get a better spoken word intro than this, but...
Oh my God, Becky, look at her butt. It is so big. She looks like one of those rap guys' girlfriends, but, you know, who understands those rap guys? They only talk to her because she looks like a total prostitute, okay? I mean, her butt is just so big. It's just so round. It's like out there. I mean, gross. Look, she's just so black.
I like big butts and I cannot lie. You
other brother, I could not talk about spoken word intros without Sir Mix-a-Lot. Just like the Meatloaf song, this has a great opening. I actually even got sampled by Nicki Minaj at one point. And the drop hits so hard that it lives up to its promise. Both of these intros have to carry a lot of weight because we're so used to the way that songs just start with a chord or a lyric or a bass line. Within the first few seconds, we're always into the music without a lot of preamble. These two songs let their openers build, as does this, but instrumentally.
Thank you.
I love the beginning to Money for Nothing. Between Sting's I Want My MTV and the way the synth crescendos to Mark Knopfler's guitar, it is sheer 80s perfection. In a decade that is so heavy with bad synthesizers, Dire Straits uses them so much to their advantage. And while I know that the most iconic rock synth intro of the 80s is the keyboard in Van Halen's Jump, this could be better for the way it hits. It leads into a classic of a song that's snarky and self-aware in a way that not enough songs were in the 80s. And speaking of drops, there's this. This one is really simple, but every time I listen to Fantasy, I love this part. And I think it's because this is where the evolution of Mariah Carey starts. So prior to this, she had monster hits in the early 90s. And they were very much on the adult pop and adult contemporary side of things. You have Emotion, Vision of Love, Love Takes Time, I Don't Want to Cry, Hero. They're great songs. I heard them over and over and over again on the radio because I was on Long Island, she was from Long Island, and they played these things to death. It was a nice alternative from Michael Bolton at the time, though. But she was like 19, 20, 21 at the time when she was recording those, but they always sounded so much older when you thought of somebody that age. And I know this has a lot to do with Tommy Mottola, etc., but what we do with this is Mariah starting a song that has a lot more hip-hop to it. It samples the Tom Tom Club's Genius of Love, and the song in the video sounds like she's having way more fun than she has had in years. And it's no wonder that Butterfly, the album, came after this. So it really does begin a really good phase of her career. One, unfortunately, that's had its ups and downs since then, but is really one of her better tracks. Now, next up, before I go into other parts of songs, I want to end with the greatest opening to a song in the history of rock. And you are welcome to debate it with me, but you'd be wrong.
Josie's on a vacation far away. Come around and talk it over. So many things that I want to say. You know I like my girls a little bit older. I just want to
I dare you to find someone in my generation who doesn't shout these lines when they hear them. You can't. I rest my case. Moving on to like the interior of a song or the middle of a song or something that's random in there and just jumps out at you. It's a memorable part. This was being the intro or the ending. What about those little parts?
Maybe five.
Now, I could have put the intro to Yellow Ledbetter here because it's such a great introduction to a song. And this is one of my favorites. But a part that gets me whenever I listen to it is Eddie Vedder saying, "Make me cry," right before Mike McCready's guitar solo. At least I'm pretty sure that's what he's saying. I could never really figure out what the lyrics are to Yellow Ledbetter. Anyway, pithy comments aside, I've heard hundreds of guitar solos in my years of listening to rock music. So many of them are insanely good. This one is right near the top of my list because those three words and how what comes after makes you feel something. And I'm going to stay in the 90s with this next one, but I'm going to flip genres to early 90s hip hop and go with this.
She's dressed in yellow. She says, "Hello, come sit next to me, you fine fellow. You run over there without a second to lose. And what comes next? Hey, bust a move."
Not only is Bust a Move by Young MC, a junior high dance classic. It holds up incredibly well for a song that was released more than 30 years ago. I'm pretty sure that if you were to play it at any function that is full of latter-day Gen Xers, this is the part we'd all say out loud, by the way. And we'd be dancing with various degrees of awkwardness. But honestly, that's the cool thing about early 90s rap and hip-hop when it crossed over into the mainstream. It was catchy, it was fun, and this is one of the best examples. Still not sure what happened to Harry and Larry to make you the best man at their wedding, though. Anyway, speaking of the only words you know to a song.
Leonard Bernstein!
Come on, how could I not put this here? I actually was surprised it wasn't on the original Retro Crush countdown. Because, you know, I have friends who are big R.E.M. fans. I like R.E.M. in a particular time. But what's funny is that they actually hate this song. I guess it's because at some point in the 90s, it got overplayed on TV shows and movies and in dorm rooms to the point where, like, people started to hate it. And to be fair, it does skirt the line of the novelty song. But I've loved it. I've loved it when I first heard it in junior high school. I love it now. And while I figured out some of the lyrics, and yes, I know that I can look them up, but what's the fun in that? I always know to yell at the name of the conductor of the New York Philharmonic whenever the song plays. Let's listen to some Sticks.
But we'll try best that we can to carry on.
This is a bit of a cheat because it's not the song per se or the moment per se. It's the way I associate this part of the song with a specific moment on a television show. And it's from the pilot episode of Freaks and Geeks. Now, if you've ever seen that episode, the final scene is at the McKinley High School homecoming dance. Geeky Sam, who's played by John Francis Daly, has asked cheerleader Cindy to dance with him, and they awkwardly start swaying to the slow opening of the song, because he wanted a slow dance. And then the guitars kick in, like he didn't know that was going to happen, and he's kind of this immature, innocent kid, so it totally makes sense. And of course, the song speeds up, and like as you watch him react, the look on his face is like he doesn't know what to do, like he was really hoping that he could get a slow dance out of it. And Cindy just kind of encourages him to just dance, and they have a great time. And it's a sweet moment in a television episode and television show that is like the very definition of brilliant but canceled. And the song on its own is great, but like that elevates it to something. And it's hard for me to separate from that moment of Freaks and Geeks. Now, I'm not the biggest fan of Sticks. I will give Dennis DeYoung credit, though, for singing an amazing piece of operatic rock. And like Eric Cartman, you really can't not finish listening to the song when you hear it. Up next is the bridge from what has to be one of the top five coming-of-age songs.
So let it rock. Let it roll, let the Bible belt come and save my soul. Hold on to 16 as long as you can. Change is coming around real soon, make us women and men.
One day I will get around to doing a Mellencamp episode, a Mellencast, if you will. For now, I'll give you my love for this song, especially its bridge. For the first 2.5 minutes, it is, to steal a lyric from a song, a little ditty. Then there's some drums in the background, there's a couple of electric guitars, but a lot of it is acoustic and the rhythm is kept by hand claps. Then you get drums and this anthemic tone shift with no other instrumentation before it goes back to the original little ditty. Plus the line, hold on to 16 as long as you can, is such a great line. It encapsulates adolescence in just a phrase. The song is 42 years old And honestly, it feels as fresh as a lot of what you hear on the radio today. I can hear Jack and Diane in songs by the Lumineers, the Avett Brothers, Camp, a host of other bands I'm hearing on the radio. Mellencamp himself is just so great and transcends the music of its time on so many of his tracks, Jack and Diane especially. But when it comes to bridges, etc., like this, there's a group that one-ups people like Mellencamp, and here is one of the best ones ever.
Now it's time for a breakdown.
Never gonna get it, never gonna get it. Never gonna get it, never gonna get it. Never gonna get it, never gonna get it. Never gonna get it.
Whoa, whoa, whoa,
whoa. Never gonna get it, never gonna get it. Never gonna get it, never gonna get it. Never gonna get it, never gonna get it. Never gonna get it, never get it.
En Vogue, of course, had other songs that were hits. Their duet with Salt-N-Pepa, What a Man, is one of the best songs of the 90s. But if you want to encapsulate what made this group so good, it is this very moment. En Vogue didn't really make it out of the early 90s. It kind of got, they were there, they lost a member, they got swallowed up in the wake of Destiny's Child, and they tried to make a comeback in the latter part of the decade. But When My Love, parentheses, Never Gonna Get It, was on the air, you couldn't escape it. It hit number 2 on the Hot 100, and the video, which is an iconic tribute to the Supremes, was nominated for 6 VMAs. It's still their best piece, and this is the best part of it. So I have 5 more songs to go on my list here, and they are all outros and endings. I do want to re-clarify here, that's not that it's a big deal or anything, but I'm really picking from personal preferences. So while I'm sure that the ending to, say, A Day in the Life is one of the best known and most iconic endings in pop music, I kept it off this list in favor of stuff I just wanted to talk about. Also not on the list is the end of You Can't Always Get What You Want, because I talked about that on the episode of Fire and Water I did about the Stones. I also didn't include the sing-along at the end of American Pie, because I talked about that song back when I covered The Day the Music Died in 2019. And I recommend checking all those episodes out, especially that Fire and Water Records episode about the Stones. It was incredibly fun to do. Anyway, first up are the Bare Naked Ladies.
When I'm surrounded, I just can't stop.
Like Mellencamp, I could do a whole podcast episode about the Bare Naked Ladies. I probably will one day. Brian Wilson isn't the first song of theirs I ever heard. That was The Old Apartment. But it was the first one I got obsessed with once I started buying their back catalog around the time Stunt came out in 98. I also downloaded the guitar tablature from the internet back in 99 and did my best to interpolate it to the piano. I did a pretty good job, if I remember correctly, and I distinctly remember that the tab has this outro of, like, banging on what I think was the E chord, like, as best as you can, over and over and over again. Now, I have not properly sat down at a piano in decades at this point, really. I'm very out of practice, but I do remember that I used to love to play anything that would allow me to just put all my energy into it, and banging out this chord all the way until the end was just so much fun. Speaking of Brian Wilson, by the way.
God only knows what I'd be without.
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 I consider God Only Knows one of the most beautiful songs ever written. The song is 3 minutes long. It's only 3 minutes long. And the refrain of God Only Knows What I'd Be Without You is sung in a round for the entirety of the last minute, starting quietly and then just having layer after layer added upon it. And the tone never really changes. It doesn't get louder or more effusive or anything like that. It doesn't get pleading. It's just wistful and constant and layered and layered and layered. And that's what makes it beautiful. Now, this next part is definitely more emotional and does get more pleading or the tone does kind of accelerate as we go. But it does start in a similar fashion to God Only Knows, kind of. Anyway, here it is. So instead of starting with one voice and layering it in, we start with a bass line, then layer on the instruments until you hear Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham. There's so much pain and desperation in this song. This entire part feels like these people are holding on for dear life. And considering the drama that surrounded the recording of Rumors and that this was the only song that all five of them get writing credit for, that's apt. I have two more songs here, and they are both from the 80s. The first one, I'm actually, like one of the other ones I mentioned, I'm surprised this wasn't on Robert Berry's original list, because it is as iconic as anything else in the decade. Tainted Love was a song originally recorded in 1965 by Gloria Jones, but I don't know how many people actually knew that when they heard Soft Cell's 1981 cover version. In fact, it wasn't until I was somewhere in my 20s that I learned that Soft Cell's song was a cover, probably because I was watching VH1 and it was on a show. The song in itself is one of the best of that decade, but what kicks it up to another level is the way that it slides from Tainted Love into this cover of Where Did I Love Our Love Go by the Supremes in an almost impromptu manner. And I've heard Tainted Love without its second cover, but it just doesn't feel right. And I keep waiting for them to sing the Supremes anytime that plays and we just get a fade out of Tainted Love. And they would play this version on the radio all the time. So that's how I knew it, because I think it was like on a 12-inch single or something. It's always great to hear it whenever I hear it on the radio. I don't hear it very much anymore. But yes, this is easily one of the best outros of the 80s. But there's one more, and I think it's better. It's the one I prefer. It's more iconic to me, or at least it's the iconic ending to one of the most iconic songs That was with one of the most iconic movies of the 80s from Simple Minds. Now, anybody who knows me is just like, oh, yeah, of course. Because really, I mean, try as I might, I can't think of anything to say about this except to say it's awesome. Don't You Forget About Me is a perfect pop song. It's made even more perfect because it's being the theme to The Breakfast Club. The sentiment is heartfelt without being sappy. The vocal performance is amazing. And this part is the perfect closer because it comes after the bridge, which is a lull in the song. And then you have the drums and this la, 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 you know, part that is basically telling the listener to let go and to sing along. And like I said, it is perfection. And it's the perfect way to end this list. And of course, it's not a complete list. There are many songs, artists, entire genres that I left off. If you asked me to compile this list again by flipping through my music collection, I'd probably swap out half of it for something else. I mean, this is just the way these things tend to go, right? But it was fun. It was fun as hell to compile this. The concept was really interesting because you had to kind of reduce something to a bit, just like you think about favorite scenes in a movie or favorite pages or moments or panels in a comic book and stuff like that. So I just thought it would be fun to do this. So if you've got parts you want to consider, you've got things you think are like, no, this should be on the list, that sort of thing, send them my way. I'll put them into a letter section in a future episode. Now, as far as a future episode, I will be back next time with something completely different and random. And if things go the way I want them to, I actually will be back toward the end of May, because I meant to do this episode in April and things just got in my way. So, in the meantime, send me feedback, promote the show, leave a review, all of that other stuff, and check out the show notes to see some links and extras. And follow the blog for more essays here and there. I've been trying to write more this year in addition to these podcast episodes. And as always, thank you very much for listening and take care. Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Affidavit, which is produced by me, Tom Panneries. All clips are copyright their respective copyright holders and no infringement is intended. This podcast is a part of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you can find at twotruefreaks.com. If you like the show, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps the show get noticed by other people. Feedback via email can be sent to popcultureaffidavit@gmail.com. For show notes and essays and other things random in the world of popular culture, visit popcultureaffidavit.com. You can also follow this show on Facebook at facebook.com/popcultureaffidavit and on Twitter at popaff. That's P-O-P-A-F-F. Thanks for listening, and come back next time for more pop culture randomness.